Last Sunday, I had a nice surprise after worship. We had begun last Sunday our sermon series, Grains of Truth. And then later in the day, after the worship service, I noticed that a friend of mine, Stacy, had posted some pictures on Facebook of some grains, some wheat fields. They were beautiful pictures. This was in southern Anne Arundel County, what we called South County, or SoCo, when we lived there, an agricultural part of the state. They were beautiful pictures, and I would like to share some of these pictures with you. So, ushers, just to remind you to dim the lights so that we can look up on the screen and take a look at some of these pictures that are going to come up. I had asked her what had inspired her to take these pictures, and she shared a number of things, but she shared that our worship service last Sunday was a part of that. That she'd passed by these grain fields before, and she had been tempted to take pictures of them before, but it was the worship service and the fact that last Sunday was an especially beautiful day that just cinched it for her, and so as she was driving around, she decided to snap a few pictures of these. So I share them with you partly because they're beautiful and partly because they illustrate the message from this past week, but also because what a wonderful way to spend the Sabbath, using God's creative gifts at work in you to lift up and celebrate the beauty of creation, which in turn celebrates the beauty of our Creator God. It is holy, it is good, it is restful, it is replenishing, it is God-honoring and soul-restoring, and all of these things are exactly what Sabbath is supposed to be. So I just wanted to share those things with you. We continue this week with week two of our sermon series, Grains of Truth. Today the story is the parable of the sower from Mark's Gospel, Mark chapter 4. If you were to imagine a setting for this story, the parable of the sower, you would probably imagine a grain field, much like what you were just looking at on the screen. So imagine how surprising it is then to read that opening line of Mark 4, and it begins with, again, Jesus began to preach by the sea. By the sea, that's right. Literally on the water. The crowds had come to hear Jesus. They were pushing him off the beach. He had no room to preach. He had to get into a boat and push off the beach. And from there, that's how he preached his sermon. And that's where Jesus' ministry began. There on the north shore of the Sea of Galilee, near Capernaum, Jesus' hometown. There in the boat, with water splashing all around, little waves washing up on the beach, little waves slapping up against the hull of the boat, fishy smell all around, fishy net smell all around. There, Jesus began his sermon. A sower went out to sow. A farmer went out to farm. I think that's funny, because you would expect just the opposite. You would expect a story about the sea. You would expect the miracle of the fishes. You would expect an analogy about fishing or boats or how God is the anchor for us in every storm, and God secures us through all the chaos of life and the worries of life and the anxieties and fears of life. But instead, from that fishy boat full of fishy smells down by the seashore, Jesus began, a sower went out to sow. A farmer went out to farm. One commentator pointed out in his commentary that this wasn't terribly unusual. You see, the Sea of Galilee is surrounded by rolling hills. And those were the hills that the farmers used to farm. And they appear like they cascade right down to the water, like the grain fields would almost touch the sea. And so from the beaches, from the boat, you could look up and see the grain fields, maybe even the farmers at work in the fields. And the farmers from their fields could look down upon the sea and see the boats and the fishermen. And so fishermen could watch the farmers. Farmers could watch the fishermen. They were both familiar with each other's work, and both were staples of this ancient world economy. So not terribly unusual, as I initially thought. It was a lovely scene, a lovely setting. As you imagine a sower, a farmer, out in the fields, put behind you all of these thoughts of modern, mechanized farming, think of a simpler time, a more beautiful time, a more artistic time, a more poetic time. Imagine, if you will, the sower out walking through the fields, big bag of grain slung around his neck, reaching into the bag and scattering the seeds, his arm waving in rhythmic, artistic fashion as he spreads the seeds across the fields. It would have been quite beautiful and a perfect illustration for Jesus in his preaching. This story gets divided into two parts. There's the parable, and then there's the explanation of the parable. Today I'm dealing with the parable itself. Next Sunday I'll deal with the explanation of the parable. But when I mentioned to a friend this past week that I was going to be preaching on the parable of the sower, she kind of groaned. Ugh. I said, "What's the matter? Don't you like parables?" She said, "They're fine. I just wish that Jesus had been a little bit more clear when he was giving instructions and telling stories." Well, some people feel that way. Some people do wish that Jesus had been a little clearer. Jesus spoke in parables, to be sure. There was intentionality in the way that Jesus spoke. I like it. I like the ambiguity. I like the room for interpretation. I like the fact that we can't definitively say, it's this, it's that. Instead, we get to say, well, it might be this, or it might be that. And if you don't like parables, well, I wonder, does that say less about the parables and a little bit more about you? Then maybe you don't like gray areas in life. Maybe you like things black and white. Maybe you're more comfortable saying, it is this, it is that. Gray isn't your color. Well, that's right. By the way, I think it's wonderful that the word gray itself is a little ambiguous. Because gray doesn't have just one spelling. Gray has two proper spellings. There's G-R-A-Y and G-R-E-Y. Both are acceptable. Both are proper. So you can't say about gray, that's spelled wrong. You can say that about black and white, but you can't say that about gray. So it's wonderfully fitting. In our gray world, where it's neither black nor white, there's a little bit of ambiguity, a little bit of in-between. So back to the story. The parable of the sower itself is a parable about parables, in the sense that it is an explanation of what parables are all about. That is, that there is a little bit of mystery around it. It wasn't perfectly clear. Some people would get it, some people wouldn't. Let anyone with ears hear, Jesus said. It's a little bit peculiar, isn't it? It's a little bit of a theological conundrum, a challenge for us. Why? Why would some people get it and some people not? Why would some people understand and some people wouldn't? And wouldn't Jesus want everybody to get it? Why is there any mystery at all? Why is this message, why is this person of the Christ, why is this message that he brings a mystery at all? Why isn't it just black and white? Why isn't it just spelled out crystal clear so there's no doubt, no confusions, no misunderstanding. That's what we want, right? And that's what we rely on these preacher folk to tell us from time to time. And it's also counterintuitive to what we know of Jesus, right? Because it feels a little exclusive. Oh, some people are going to get it and some people aren't. What's that all about, Jesus? Just the opposite of who Jesus was. Jesus wasn't exclusive. Jesus was breaking down walls of exclusion, especially reaching out to all of those society forgot, the least, the last, and the lost. That whole theological challenge reminds me a little bit of that hardening of Pharaoh's heart that we talked about a little bit in our Lenten season. And God's willful hardening of Pharaoh's heart. Why would God want that? Wouldn't God want everybody to turn to God? Of course. Of course, God would. And it's just the opposite of the God that we know. God draws people to him. God doesn't push people away from him. So it's a mystery. And just a tad beyond our ability to explain it perfectly. But the harshness of that theology is softened just a bit as you read on in verse 22 of Mark 4, where Jesus says to his disciples, "There is nothing hidden except to be disclosed, nor anything secret except to come to light." In other words, this hardening of hearts and this misunderstanding and this failure to understand and this failure to grasp and this failure for anything to be clear is all just temporary. In time, it will be worked out. I don't know if that's this side of heaven or the next side of heaven, but it's all just going to be worked out. That's what Jesus was presenting to us. So in spite of what feels like a strict black and white, or in spite of what feels like a strict determinism, the future is not determined. The future is not set in stone. The future is only set in stone if things remain on the course that they're on right now. But if things change, the future changes. Remember Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge? He got that gift that nobody wants, those three spirits and his old buddy Marley. What a gift. With gifts like that, no thanks, I don't want them. But those gifts were life-saving. Saved his life, saved his future. And when he got to peer into that future, he saw what the future would be like if he stayed on that same course. But he wasn't determined to do so. He could break free. He had freedom. He had free will. He could choose a different course. And so the future could be changed because he went back and changed a different course. In this sense, the future is not what it has to be. The future is only what it might be if we don't change course. In that sense, the future is full of hope, full of possibility, full of wonder, full of delight, full of joy. Things can be changed. Hearts can be changed. People can be changed. People can be transformed. We can have a completely different life from anything that we ever expected before. Sometimes it just takes time to work these things out. So don't give up hope for yourselves, for your family members, for your friends, for your neighbors. Sometimes these things just take time. I used to downplay the sense of calling, God calling us, partly because I believe that God calls everybody. Liberally, God's voice, God's call is out there like a sower sowing seeds, throwing them out there for everybody, scattering them all around. And I still believe that. God does. Everyone is called. So why do some respond and some don't? That's a challenge. And I see it in my personal life with my personal family and friends. And so the older I get and the more I go on in life, I change how I think about call and I realize it is quite special. Yes, God continues to call everybody, but there are so many obstacles for that call getting through that when it does get through to us, when we do respond, when we do hear God's voice, when we are able to respond with delight and with joy to God's call, that's something extremely special and something wonderful to celebrate. And so we do our part, whatever our part is, to help others so that call can get through. Like these parents raising these kids, promising to expose them to the things of God, promising to expose them to the things that are important to God, promising them to be good role models to them, teach them about God before they have any concept that God exists, tearing down barriers for the call that goes out liberally and freely. So I'm going to talk about this more next Sunday, but I just wanted to plant a seed. That's what I'm doing. That was spontaneous, by the way. I didn't write that into my text. I just came up with that. Boy, that's a God thing. So for now and for this week, just think about the Galilee, that beautiful sea, that beautiful lake, that beautiful scene, the cascading hills, the sowers out in the fields, the grain fields coming up, the sunshine hitting those beautiful gold fields, the sunshine hitting the sea and watching the ripples and the waves and all of it sparkle. And the richness of it all, and the richness of God's call in our lives, especially when there are no more obstacles to stand in the way of this beautiful, growing, germinating relationship with our beautiful and wonderful Creator God. Thanks be to God. So be it. Amen.